Hey everybody, it's Lee. I know we're heading into the off season, so we wanted to give a shout out to our title sponsor, NHL Sense Arena, one more time. And again, we have a coupon for $50 off an annual subscription when you use Hockey Never Stops at hockey.sensearena.com. I always like to remind everybody, I've been using this thing for 6 months and I'm just blown away, not just from the VR aspect of it and the virtual reality side of things, but the ability to give different perspectives of the game, whether I'm playing as a goaltender. And I got to admit, it is really hard, but it has really given me a perspective from that point of hockey, which has made me a better coach and a better ice hockey player. Or the skater modes, which help you work on cognitive skills and other things like heads-up play that you don't normally get to work on in a practice or a game. So I implore you to check it out. It helps us out. It helps them out. Support our title sponsor, NHL Sense Arena. Get $50 off an annual subscription when you use Hockey Never Stops at hockey.sensorina.com. Again, that's Hockey Never Stops. That's the code at hockey.sensorina.com. Check it out. And without further ado, enjoy this episode of Our Kids Play Hockey. Hello, hockey friends and families around the world, and welcome to another edition of Our Kids Play Hockey, powered by NHL Sense Arena. I'm Lee Elias with Mike Benelli and Christy Casciano Burns, and today we are joined by a defenseman who had a nine-year NHL career with the Bruins, Flyers, Hurricanes, and Canucks. It just rolls off the tongue the way I wrote that, which was preceded by a four-year successful career at Boston College. Today he is the Hockey Player Development Director for NHL Sense Arena and an ambassador for the Warrior for Life Fund, and an ambassador for the Boston Bruins Academy Learn to Play program. Outside playing in the NHL, that is a fun, awesome resume. Please join me in welcoming Andrew Alberts to the show today. Andrew, welcome to Our
thank
Kids Play
Hockey. Thank you for having me. I appreciate that. It was a long intro, but thank you. I appreciate it.
You know, Andrew, believe it or not, that was not the longest intro I've done. I've had pages. Christy and Mike have had to sit through me doing that for minutes at a time at some point. But your experience made that easy. So we appreciate you being here.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm excited to give you guys a little more information on Sense Arena and talk about my hockey background and hopefully give some tips for all the hockey moms, hockey parents, hockey dads, and kids out there.
Yeah, Andrew, let's start there. You know, I was reading up on you, obviously, before the episode. Noticed you're one of four kids. You grew up in the hockey hotbed of Minneapolis, Minnesota. It does not get much more centralized in hockey in the U.S. than that. Was hockey on the table at birth? Was it something you found? Why don't you walk us through kind of the moment the journey began?
Sure. So we grew up in a house that had kind of a swampy lake behind the house. And so when I was four, my dad shoveled it off and kind of out I went. That was kind of the start of it for me. But as I was a kid, I had the opportunity to watch my uncles play hockey. And so I had three uncles that played D1 hockey up in Duluth, Notre Dame, and for the University of Minnesota Golden Gophers.
Wow.
And so on my mom's side, they're from the Iron Range up north. If you're familiar with Minnesota, hockey reigned up there, still does. And that was a hotbed for a lot of players coming out of Minnesota, playing at the schools, mostly around the Midwest there. So as a young kid, I grew up watching my uncles play, and they come over, we play in the basement, and they're stick handling and toe dragging around me. And so that kind of got me hooked. And then I had the great opportunity of playing on, you know, just the lake behind my house. And that's where like the excitement and the love and the passion really started for me, where it's no parents or coaches telling you what to do. It's a group of high schoolers and you're playing boot hockey or you're playing on skates and you're using a taped up ball or puck. It didn't even matter, but you're just having fun out there. And so that's kind of where it all started for me. And you know, obviously I'd want to pass it on to my kids. So.
Right. And I'm glad you mentioned that, because I think a lot of parents today don't put a lot of stock in letting their kids have that creative outlet and just go out there and have fun with no refs, nobody telling you how to skate, where to skate, what to do. There really is a beauty in that. And I'm glad you mentioned that, because I think parents think they have to be constantly in a controlled environment, their kids all the time. Yeah, so what are the benefits of that free play on the ice?
Yeah, and I'm glad you asked, and we're jumping into it right here, and it's great. But so Liam, you mentioned a squirts and a U8 and U10, I think your kids, and I had the same kids that played the same level. And at the beginning of every practice, that's what we do, is we give them that 10, 12 minutes, and we throw out a different ball or a different toy and just let them like be creative, be yourselves, go figure out a small game, a keep away game or a 3-on-2 or whatever it might be. Maybe it ends up everybody chasing everybody, or coaches versus players, but one, it's fun, so the kids want to keep coming back and enjoy it. But two, it's letting them be creative and not be afraid to make mistakes. And that's the number one thing. Like, kids are so, their day is constructed and their schedules are, it's wake up, breakfast, go to school, go to piano lessons or whatever it might be, drum lessons, and then to practice, and then dinner, and then sleep. And so there's a schedule for every day. So if they have some free time to be creative and try new things and make mistakes, that's how they're going to learn and really start to enjoy the game. So we always try to do something different at the beginning of practice, even at the end of practice, and make it fun, and not, don't let the coaches kind of get in the way is what I like to say.
Yeah, Andrew, yeah. It's the time of year where I'm getting asked by a lot of parents of new hockey players, you know, hey, your kid skates so well, what do you do in the summer? Or who do you go to in the summer? And I say, I spend $10 at a public session once a week, and I throw them out there and I let them chase each other and fall down and dance and have fun. And I said, that is, you know, minus some little bit of instruction, like that is everything. I leave them alone. I let them learn how to walk. And I said, I don't think there's been a better teacher. I said, I can show them stride work and knee bends and all these mechanics all day. But at the end of the day, they need to want to learn it. Yeah. And public session, I always said, or free skate, whatever you call it, wherever you're at, is a wonderful method to do that. But again, as you said, you can apply that to practice. You can allow them to have fun. Even when coaching at extremely high levels, we'd like to play games right at the beginning of practice just to loosen everybody up. It's always competitive at that level, right? But something fun. Mike, I think you were about to say something, and I apologize. I jumped in.
No, it's all good. I mean, this is exactly, I think, what happens to all of us, right? In the hockey world, we forget that free play environment is something, unfortunately, we need to cultivate. Like, we take it away from kids. Like if for instance, if parkour became a $1 million industry, right? Then all of a sudden you wouldn't allow kids just to jump off things and jump on and hang on to things. You'd be like, no, you can't do it that way. You got to use your toe and distribute your weight this way so you can catch yourself. Like, you know, so what we do with hockey, it's amazing to me. Like we use the example a lot on the show too, Andrew, that, you know, if you go to a playground and you watch, you know, and you let kids off on the playground equipment and go to the monkey bars, there's no parents instructing kids on what to do and how to do it. And, you know, the daring kids go on top of the highest point, and it's scary, right? But they do it, and they figure out a way to climb up there. And then the kids that are scared and maybe don't have the confidence to do it, don't do it. And they stay low and they stay in the tunnels and they crawl around the ground. So there's this whole thing where we take this away from our kids in hockey. And what your point was, you know, that free play environment. I mean, it's going to fit right into what I think Sense Arena is to me, but this free play environment of the kids being to be in their own creative world and take out of it what they want to take out of it is so crucial later on. And every sport expert there is says the same thing, but yet we do everything. We do everything to take it away. Like, we do everything that counter, you know, is counteractive to exactly what we want our kids to be. And that's creative, you know, passionate, you know, thinking outside the box type of athletes. And, you know, so it was great that you were able to grow up in an environment. And if you can manipulate that environment with your own kids, I would say do that as much as possible, no matter how many power skating classes the other group's doing.
Right. Absolutely. Great environment that you grew up in. Continue your journey. When did you know that you were that competitive hockey player and you had to follow your passion and your dream of making it in the big, big league?
You know, I never really got to the point where I thought I would make it or I'd get there. And it's, I think I might be very different from a lot of different players where my mom's family was a big hockey family, but my dad grew up playing basketball and baseball and golf. And so that's where he was pushing my siblings and I. So he didn't know a lick about hockey, and my mom was pretty laid back. And so I didn't really get, you know, the push or the desire from, you know, that parent side to say, hey, you got to do this camp or do that camp. And so, you know, like Mike and Liam, you were saying, like, in the summers, I played baseball, I played golf, and I didn't touch my equipment till, you know, it was September, October, because hockey started back in November, back when we were little. Right. And so you just play for a short period of time. So as I continue to play, you know, I wasn't on the top teams. I was always a B player. And so as much as I love the sport and as much as, you know, I had that competitiveness within me, I was never really the best player, and I was great on the pond, which I had fun doing, right? But when it came down to, you know, serious, you know, team, town hockey, I wasn't the best player. And so I had the drive, but I didn't have that drive to say, hey, I want to go, I know I'm going to play in the NHL, and this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to take these steps and go to these skating coaches and shooting coaches to get there. It wasn't important to me at the time. It was having fun with my buddies, and I'll kind of see what happens. And so that's kind of the mindset I had, which is very different for, I think, a lot of young kids nowadays.
You know, I need to reiterate to our audience, this man that is speaking, he has played for Team USA. He is a prominent college player. He played in the NHL for nearly a decade. And here he is saying, yeah, I played on B teams. I just had fun, and I played multiple sports. Andrew, the nice part about this is you're talking to the right audience for this. We always tell our parents that listening that you're not crazy. It's the hockey world that's kind of crazy, right? So I love that you reaffirm that. I do want to ask this too. Were you 6'5 when you were 12, or did that come later?
Well, so that's a great question. So I was 5'8 in high school.
There you go.
Until my junior year when I shot up and I was 6'3. But just to go back quickly, when Bantams finished up, so I don't know, is that U15, U16? I don't know how they do it nowadays.
Around there, yeah.
And I tried out for my high school team. So you try out for varsity. And after a day, they're like, no, you can go down to the JV tryouts. And I,
wow.
2 days later, got cut from JV. And I was like, oh, you know what? That's all right. I know my buddies are playing there, but I still know some guys that are playing junior gold. Like, that'd be great to play on that team. I could play with my neighbor that's a couple years older that we never had a chance to play on the same team. Tried out for them. Go check the list at the arena like you used to do. Got cut from that team. And I'm like, well, what is going on here, right? So I think my hockey career is over. And I'm like, all right, I got to play junior A, which it is what it is. But I'm sure there'll be some buddies coming down. Tried out for that team, and they said, no, we're just going to make it seniors and juniors this year. I cut from that team. And so all left was house hockey. And so me going from playing Bantam Bees to house hockey, the worst league level I could play, and you know, you're crushed as a player, right?
Right.
And it ended up being probably one of my most fun years of hockey because all expectations were gone at that point. Because as you're moving into high school, you want to make high school and try to make a college team and whatnot. And so every expectation was gone. I was playing with a couple of kids that lived up the street, buddies of mine, and just no pressure from yourself, from your parents. And so we had a good team. I had fun. And that was kind of the bottom of the barrel, but also gave me the opportunity to enjoy it more. Right. And so there I was playing house hockey as a 15-year-old. That summer I said, you know what, I want more. And so I decided just mentally, hey, I'm going to put everything into it this summer and see what happens. And I ended up switching schools, just for, the educational aspect of it. Cause I was at Eden Prairie where there are 4,000 kids in the high school to switch over to Benilde. It was, you know, 125 in my class. And so then I went to Benilde that next year and, ran into some very influential people in my life that, kind of molded my hockey career and mindset. Jack Blatherwick, I don't know if you guys know that name. And Ken Paul, he's been a legend of Minnesota high school hockey. So met those two and things kind of took off from there. But, it's never a straight line. There's always gonna be bumps and curves and dips and fall all the way down to the bottom. And for me, it was really important that, you know, I had that failure to learn from it and move on.
Right. That is such a great message for kids. I mean, there could be a kid listening right now who's going through something very similar. Doors are closing. People are telling you, you can't. People are saying you're no good. Yet what you did was you just adjusted your sails and you took a different direction and you made it work for you. And you figured out how to navigate through those rough waters and still succeed. I think that's a great story. And I hope every kid listening right now gets a big takeaway from that and doesn't get discouraged.
No,
and who the hell are these evaluators? What the heck's going on over there? The state of hockey, for God's sakes. You know, you should be able to, you know. I mean,
we need to find them and say,
but Mike, that goes into like the politics and parents of hockey, right? Like some kids deserve to be certain places and they're not, but you know, when it really comes down to it, as much as you want to get somewhere and achieve a goal, you know, you just have to keep playing and believe in yourself, right? And do whatever it's going to take to get to the next level.
Yeah,
I love it. And we got
Chris Myra, who's out here on the East Coast
now. Yeah, I play with Myra.
Yeah. And he's a big Jack fan. And I think, you know, having that kind of like, think about the opportunity for you to go from where you were to go to a guy like that, which is just a technical, in-depth skating person, like somebody that could teach the mechanics of skating differently, right? Than a lot, and even in Minnesota, he was above the grade, right? So having that opportunity, which if you would have made that top team, you never would have left school, you never would have moved those programs, you never would have said, I got to work harder. Like, you wouldn't have done all those things. Like, you would have said, hey, I'm good. Like, I'm a big kid and I'm better than most kids and I don't need to work on those little things. So it really is, you know, and again, for the listeners, even in Minnesota, you can get missed by the best evaluators in the world, right?
Andrew, I think, love your story. I love it.
Yeah, I was just saying, not even 15 minutes in, we got a bleep mic already.
I'm passionate.
No, you're passionate.
This kid, Andrew Albertson, I'm like, this 15-year-old kid, how is he not making these teams? Like, I'd be like, they're going, oh, thank God my kid's getting made. You know, my kid's making it. I don't care. But my God, you know,
Mike, I'll say this too, and Andrew, I want to thank you for sharing that for multiple reasons. You know, one, and you said it too, we say this all the time, there is no path. There is no right way to go. There is no team you have to make to succeed. At the end of the day, when we've interviewed NHL players or players that have played at a high level, it really comes down to drive and passion. Obviously, some athleticism. You have to have the ability to play sports at a high level. But if the drive and the passion's not there, it's not going to happen. And the other thing I've noticed, too, is that it's easy to have drive and passion if you love the game when you're playing on the team you want to play on. But I really think that it's cultivated and it's made in that molten lava of not making the team and not succeeding, because that's when you really realize, man, I love this and I want this.
Yeah.
That's the moment that dreams are born. I'm not trying to be poetic here. Mm-hmm. All right. And again, even with that, there's no guarantees. Right. But I think it's important to notice that. And I really appreciate you sharing that.
No, I think there, if you look at every top individual, I think at some point one of them faced adversity, right? And so it's kind of fun to ask people, hey, at what point did you know, or what point did something happen where you flipped the switch, right?
Right.
You know, so you kind of think of it as like, you know, your favorite failure, if you will. Like, hey, what's the favorite part of your career that happened where you had to, hey, all right, I got to make a mindset or change whatever I'm doing and pivot to get to where I want to go. And so there's a lot of juicy stuff when you ask somebody a question like that.
Yeah, look, I can tell you right now that my decision point to want to work in this game and be involved in this game and make this game my life was off of a team I didn't make. It was that year I made the decision. I was like, no, I want this. So I totally equate to that. And again, you know, look, you might not like this comparison, but that's eerily like the Michael Jordan story. Where he didn't make the high school basketball team.
You can't do that. That's not allowed.
I just did. I did.
You can throw Tom Brady in there too, but no, we're not going to compare any of these guys.
Well, Andrew's not going to be in a Dunk Kings commercial anytime soon.
No. So Andrew, you mentioned juicy stuff. Give us some juicy stuff about your NHL days. What was that like? I mean, we all can just imagine. How grueling was it? How fun was it? You're living the dream. What was that like?
You just said it, like you're living a dream and you're almost in like fantasy land, right? Because you go from playing college, doing something you love, to somebody paying you money to do something that you love, which is great. You find out it's a business very quickly, mm-hmm. which is fine. But when you're in the moment, it's almost like, all right, I want this to last. I'm just gonna, and for me, I'm a guy, put my head down, work out, you know, work hard on the guy across from me, next to me, whatever it might be. I'm not losing a spot because of my effort, right? And my attitude. So I showed up every day, hardest working guy on the team. And it's funny because my teammates will tell me that I'm the hardest practice player they've ever seen. But I take that. I'll own that, right? Because I practice like I play, right?
That's a compliment for you, yeah.
And so two things we can control are effort and attitude. So I showed up every day, a smile on my face. I'm going to make the best out of what's going to happen today. And I kind of just rode that wave for the first couple of years of my career, right? Until you start to establish yourself. And I had the, just, I don't know how lucky am I. I had Zdeno Chara is one of my mentors, right? My second year. I had Brian Leetch my first year. So guys that I looked up to. Hal Gill my first year. You know, guys that I could try to emulate. Big guys, a lot of reach. You know, smart players. And so working with them in my early years was great. And again, it's like fantasy camp, right? You're showing up to the rink every day and you got, you know, Zane Chara, you know, Big Z's like, LB, I want to play with you. We're going to, you know, be together. We're shut down this line, this and that. So I gained a lot from those guys as my career went on. And then, you know, ran into some troubles with concussions and whatnot, but, you know, continue to play and drop back to be more of a, you know, a 4, 5, 6 guy towards the end of my career, which is still fine. Cause, any day in the NHL is a great day. Right. But it's you meet a lot of people, a lot of teammates, a lot of good relationships. And, you know, we had a great success in Vancouver and got to the Stanley Cup Finals. Obviously, we lost here to Boston, which I'm reminded every day I see a Bruins logo and everybody I see, they always give me crap, but it's all good. It's a whirlwind. But I think one of the reasons that I stayed there, sorry, long-winded answer here, but one of the reasons I stayed there is that I never, and for better or for worse, I never felt I belonged in a way just because of where I came from. And it was, like I said, it's like fantasy camp every day. And I think that internal kind of like pressure on myself to keep, you know, proving myself every day is what allowed me to stick around for so long. Because if you ask a lot of my teammates and buddies, it's not my skill level that kept me there. You know, it is probably my skating and my work ethic and my attitude. And so if you can be a good teammate and fill a role, you can play a long time.
Yeah, well, Andrew, I'll tell you a couple of things based on your answer. Everybody wants to hear from you today, trust me, especially our audience. So there are no long-winded answers for you. You could do this episode solo, and we would all love it. The other thing, too, and I love that you touched on it, you know, sometimes that fear of whatever it is, being cut, not making it, I'm not good enough. While I still think it's healthy for people today to kind of dive into those and explore them, it can be a massive asset. Right, to people succeeding, right? You know, you hear stories, especially about athletes from yesteryear, about like, I just didn't want to get cut, and that's why I worked so hard. I think there's a lot of different ways to do it, but at the end of the day, it comes down to that work ethic that you spoke about. Like, if you don't have that, I'm guessing most players at the NHL level work pretty hard, right? Unless there's so much God-given talent that maybe they don't have to, but even then, you find those guys work hard too, right?
Yeah, I think. If you want to speak to talent and work ethic, if you look at any GM, any coach, Mike, you coach, Liam, you coach, Christy, I'm not sure if you coach well, but when you get to the higher levels,
just a hockey mom.
Yeah, but I would take a kid that works so hard all the time, and he's a dog on pucks, and he's all over the ice, than a kid that has all the talent in the world, that because that's going to run out, right? Unless you're a high-end player, right? Which some of those guys get to the NHL, but it does take hard work. But there are third and fourth line guys. So if you're a young player out there and you're not on the top line, you're not scoring all the time, guess what? You still need third and fourth line guys for every single team 100%. That are going to grind away and play smart, play good defense, win faceoffs, get pucks out of the zone, get pucks in. Like, so if you're not a goal scorer out there, don't think that you're not going to make it. You know, there's a different type of player. There's a different position, that needs to be filled on every team as you continue to move up through the ranks. So,
yeah.
Well, Andrew, go ahead, Mike.
No, I was going to say, Andrew, you know, it's almost similar to, you know, the way we talk to these, you know, these kids coming up now, 15, 16, 17 year old players, that, you know, everybody can't be Adam Fox. Like you need players to play D, even in a world of positionless hockey and, you know, all this free flow, you know, everybody's on the offense, everybody's on the defense. The fact is, everybody's not on the defense, and somebody's got to play D. And again, do you need seven of those guys? No, but you can't have seven players that don't play D. And, you know, and even forwards, you can't have seven guys. Like I used to joke all the time, like, I don't need six first line centermen. I need one, and I need somebody else to work in the corners and work the wings. I mean, the game of hockey has never changed when it comes to there's rules, there's boards, there's blue lines, there's red lines, there's positional play. And I think a lot of parents lose sight of that when their kid doesn't make a team and they're more talented than some of the kids that made the team. Because, and you know this too, from the professional ranks, like GMs, it's a science to inject a player into a role that they can help the team, even if they're not the best player on paper. We saw that recently with a couple of players, you know, like you have a player come out and they're the best, maybe the top six player, but there's not top 6 minutes, but they can't, they're not a nine. And what happens is they just never fit that role. They're like, oh my, we need this guy. Yeah, but he's never going to get in the, he's never getting in the game. And I think it's so important for parents to see that, not at 8 years old, 9 years old, but really as the kids get older, that everyone's good. You're going to outwork everyone on the ice. It means a little less about your actual talent than your, you know, attitude and work ethic and your desire to outwork your teammates. And I love the point you're making about practice, because that's really where, you know, coaches really learn who you are and learn to trust you. Like the one statement I hate the most is, well, coach, I'm a gamer. I know I'm not doing it in practice, but I show up in the game. I go, well, you're not going to get a chance to show up in the game because I can't put you in a game because I don't even see what you can do in practice. So it's just a matter. I think that's a great message for any kid. It's just, you know, show who you are in practice and the coaches will reward you. They will. I mean, maybe not every year, maybe not every shift, maybe not every coach, but eventually you'll be rewarded.
Absolutely.
Right. And I've seen fourth lines win the game. So there you go.
Well, and I would say before we turn towards NHL Sense Arena talk, Andrew, you could probably confirm this, but I don't think it's possible to win in the NHL. I don't care if you have Connor McDavid, Sidney Crosby, Alex Ovechkin. If you don't have a strong fourth line, you're not getting all the way.
It's just
one of the aspects of the game today. You need those guys too. Don't get me wrong. All right, but did you want to touch on that real quick before we turn towards?
Well, I think if we want to use the NHL for a comparison, it's easy if you look at the Edmonton Oilers and the Vegas Golden Knights. Right. Edmonton's got Drysdale and McDavid, and they, as amazing as they are, they can't get past the second round, third round, because they don't have four full lines and six D that play to the role that they're supposed to play to win the game.
Right.
You look at Vegas last year, and they had four lines that could roll over you, right? And even, you know, 60, all mobile, all played well, played good constructively in the D zone. Like, it's, they were one of the best teams I've seen the last few years, just top to bottom. I mean, goaltending out to their fourth centerman. So
it's funny, Andrew. I'll tell you this. So our audience knows this. I'm in the Philadelphia area, so I grew up a Flyers fan. And as much as I'm an NHL fan, I typically don't put stuff around memorabilia-wise or hockey-wise unless it's Flyers, just because that's the way it is. But there's that picture of the Golden Knights last year after they won the cup behind the net, and they're somehow in the formation of a heart. And I will share that on our page. It is one of the most amazing photos I have ever seen in hockey. And I got that one because as a team builder and someone who believes in what you said, you know, the hardest worker in the room and the team bond, I don't think I've ever seen a better metaphor of a team, right, embodying that. And I think you're right. I mean, top to bottom, that was a complete hockey team. And they still are in many ways. If I get an NHL talk, we're going to turn this into an NHL show, and that's not what it is. The only NHL stuff I want to talk about today is NHL Sense Arena. And Andrew, first off, I want to say we are all really proud to be partnered with NHL Sense Arena. We purposely did not take any kind of partnership or sponsorship spots on this show for years because we wanted the right partnership. We wanted someone who was as dedicated to us to growing the game, to creating those communities, and making sure that it was the right pathway forward, right? So I just first off want to tell you that, how proud we are to be partnered with you. But outside of playing, you've been around the game a lot and the business of the game in a lot of ways, right? Just reading up on your career. So I want to ask you this question. What was it about Sense Arena that really stood out and made you want to make the commitment that you made?
Glad you asked the question. So I'm going to bring it back to the first time I tried it. So Brian Decord, our director of goaltending, he helped develop the goalie product. The goalie product, for all you listeners out there, has been around a couple years longer than the player, so it's a little more polished. And so the goaltenders are really gravitating towards that. And so now we're building up the player product. It's been around for a couple years, and we're just trying to refine everything, keep adding new drills, work on the stick physics and the physics within moving the puck around to make it as lifelike as possible. So Brian called me up, it was probably 3 years ago, and said, hey, have you heard of Sense Arena? He left a message and said, hey, have you heard of Sense Arena? If not, give me a call. I'd like you to come down and just test it out. And I know Brian just through the hockey world, and I hadn't heard of it. When I came down to check it out, I thought, you know, I knew it was VR. I saw it online. I saw the YouTube videos, which really don't do it justice because once you get the headset on, you're fully immersed. Yeah. That's a whole nother conversation.
It is.
So I went down, I put it on, and the first drill I did, I think it was 3-on-1 keep away, which I believe you've done it and have done a video on.
I did. Thank you for watching that.
Put the headset on. I looked around. We had Madison Square Garden as the arena at the time. So you feel like you're in Madison Square Garden. Very cool. And I thought, this was neat. All right, I like it. Tried to grab a puck, and I understood quickly that, all right, well, it's virtual reality. There's no weight to a stick. There's no flex in the stick. There's no weight to a puck. The physics are going to be different. Okay, I can get by that, right? Because I know this is a cognitive tool. This is what they told me. So we go into 3-on-1 keep away. I understand the stick physics. I'm moving the puck around. I'm scanning. I'm pre-scanning. I'm reading off the defender, what's available. I'm like, all right, I get this, and I can kind of see where this is going. But give me game scenarios, because if we can't do a game scenario, this is great and it's a fun tool. But if we're going to teach kids development-wise patterns in the game, you know, time and space recognition, you know, all these things, we have to have game simulated drills. And they're like, yeah, no problem. So I go into shoulder check colors. And I believe if you users have not seen this, it's a drill where you have to shoulder check behind you to get a puck that's in the corner. And once you do shoulder check, a color appears and you see the color wheel, and then you can find the stick that corresponds to that color. And so I got in there and I did that drill the first time, and I could understand that now we can teach kids things that are very hard to teach on the ice, you know, and they can go through that as many reps as they want to do, thousands of reps if they want, hundreds of reps, and no one's going to hit them, right? They're not going to get hurt. They can work on having their heads up. They can work on scanning, pre-scanning, one of the most important tools in the game to understand the environment behind you, in front of you, where you're going to go with your next play. And so all these things started coming to my head. I'm thinking, if we can keep developing this, this is such a great tool for any kid 10 years old to, we have our pros that use it to stay sharp mentally in the NHL, which is really cool. So I jumped on board. I was super excited about it. And since I've been on board, we just keep trying to refine and kind of polish up things and create new scenarios and create new ways to teach kids and keep developing their cognitive process of quicker decisions, understanding patterns in the game, using their scanning ability, and, you know, getting their heads up, because players give their heads down still. And so that's a huge part of it. So that was, again, long-winded answer, but that's kind of my first interaction with sensory, and I've loved it ever since.
Well, Andrew, I can tell you this too. So when I do the videos and I say, you know, I said like 10 times that video, I can't believe how immersive this is. When I say in my video, it's like, I feel like I'm in the arena, it's one thing. But when you say it, actually played on that ice, it is a whole nother level. But yeah, I think that, you know, kind of connecting the two halves of this episode, what I love about it that you mentioned is this creativity aspect for the kids that use it, right? It's, you can do as many reps as you want. No one's really watching you, unless you want them to, of course. And that you can learn at your own pace with it, right? It's fun. And when you dive into kind of the NHL season mode, which again, they have with goalies too, we'll talk about that. There's your gamification, right? Like, you want to keep going to the next drill. You want to improve upon yourself. And it's a real game, like in the sense of not hockey game. I'm saying, like, you know, you got to go through it, right? And you have to improve. You can't, it's not easy, right? It's, you got to learn these skills. And then the last point you made that I want to reiterate 100%, as a youth coach, right? When I coach the kids, I don't necessarily have the ability to go one-on-one to teach scanning at a practice. I'd get killed by the parents for doing that, right? So these are skill sets. And Mike, you can touch on this too. These are really important skill sets that are allowed. You can't really do them off the ice until now. I'll say it that way, right? You might learn some of them on the street in a way, just looking around, but this is such a great way to do it. It's unlimited ice time. It's a lot cheaper than ice time.
All right, I got a mom question for you.
Yeah.
Andrew, you mentioned the kids with their heads down, and that was the biggest pet peeve when our kids were just learning the game, to the point where all of us parents in the stands would be yelling, "Heads up, head up. Pick up your, you know," because they're all down like that, right? It drives us crazy. And I know that's not what the coach is teaching them, but they're in that bad habit. How in the world does this break the kids of that habit of having their heads down? I need to know this.
All right. Great question. So the beauty of sensory is the constraints and parameters in which we can change within the drill. So the number one thing that we want to make this easy for kids to get their heads up, because that is one of the most important parts of the game. Because if you don't know what's in front of you or what's coming at you, being able to judge time and space, you're in trouble. So the default mode on Sensorena is, no matter where you lay your stick, that puck is going to find your stick every time. So what that tells the player is that I can have my stick on the ice and I can have my head up the whole time.
Right.
And I know that puck's going to come to my stick. And then I have to realize, all right, well, I know I can't stick handle the puck that well in VR, which is one of my favorite things because it forces you to put your stick in a position to catch a pass and give a pass and become a more efficient player. Wow. So that's the simple answer, right?
Oh, wow.
And then once they get better at, all right, well, now I know how this works and I'm keeping my head up. Now you can change the constraints that, all right, the pass is going to be 6 inches in front of you or 6 inches behind you, and you have to adjust to that pass. So the constraints within each drill is the beauty of this, but the default mode that puck is going to come to your stick every time allows young players to get their head up. And then as they progress, they can change it.
And
okay,
Christy,
parents, you are so lucky because to drive us nuts with our kids. So, yeah.
Christy, I got to tell you too, and like, I was amazed at this too, what Andrew's talking about. And again, I'm going over this because this is something I wish I had as a kid. But in the video I make on that 3-on-1 keep away, there's a moment you can actually see me realize, oh, I don't have to look down. Like, Andrew said it right. Once you get the physics down, which doesn't take long, I was making one-touch passes because, you know, there's some vibration in your hands when you're holding the stick. I mean, you can feel it kind of quote-unquote, right? But I had my head up and started making one-touch passes, and I'm really amazed because, you know, logic would dictate that's not possible.
Yeah, I'm impressed.
Yeah, but it was totally possible, right? Wow. And again, we're just talking about the player side of things.
Yeah.
Andrew. You know, I want to touch on the goaltending too. Because and this is something that's really cool. You know, we do another show here called Our Kids Play Goalie, which really is to open up the eyes of all hockey coaches and parents to the position, not just goaltenders. And we are always preaching as coaches, everyone should try goalie once, right? Now, once you get past 10, 12 years old, in historically speaking, if you're not in net, you're probably not getting in net. Yeah. Now, suddenly in my 40s, I'm in net. And I'm seeing the game from this position, per se, right? Obviously, you're not doing anything with your legs or dropping down. But I'm talking about it from a coach standpoint, about learning a lot more about that position that I've never known. And then we know from the Decord family that NHL goalies are using this to warm up for games. Mm-hmm. So why don't you just touch on the goaltending side of this? Because there's a lot of different ways it can be utilized.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not going to do as well as Brian DeCord would do, but
we'll get him on too.
best presentation here. So for goalie usage, obviously we have our NHLers, Joey DeCord and Devin Levi and others that use it for priming their brains before practice. Or if you're a beer league goalie, every shot you're seeing is going up by your ears, right? So we have a lot of beer league goalies that use it for warm up because that's the only way you're seeing real shots, catching pucks, tracking pucks and whatnot. But the other big thing from it is besides the priming the brain aspect of it, which our NHLers use for either in between periods before games, if there's no pregame skate, Joey will use it, right? Mm-hmm. Or definitely use it. But for younger players that want to experience the game and get to, you know, learn about the goaltending position and understand it better and become better at it, the biggest question is, and I'll just address it now because there's no going down. You can go down, right? But the sensors are on the hands, the glove and blocker, right? And so what the idea behind this is with the technology is that we have so many young goaltenders that just drop on every shot. Mm-hmm. Like they're just going to square up and they're going to drop on every shot, hope their angles are right, right? But we want you to make that read first. We want you to make that read. Read the release. Where's that puck coming? Get to your spot and then make the stop as opposed to just dropping every time. So one, that's the wear and tear in the body, right? So, you know, goaltenders go down and they, it's between 130 and 180 times a practice typically. Like that's a lot on the hips. There's a hip edema going on and more labrum surgeries going on than they were 20 years ago, right? So that's part of it. But then you get to, again, so you're reacting to the shot. And then within all this, there are different tools you can use. You know, you can turn on the angles button. So you have lines that show you every shot. Are you squared all your pucks? There's box control. Are you jamming the box to make sure you're protecting the little imaginary box in front of you instead of trying to protect the whole net? So again, it goes back to little features that we can add that are going to help you understand where you are in your net, how to make better saves, how to get on your angles, how to track pucks, and then reading the release with our NHL videos, which is really cool.
Yeah. And Andrew, I'll add on too, because like the other half of that, you can't go down. Well, in the player mode, skater mode, you don't skate either. Right. But that's the point, right? Because you're doing that on the ice. This is forcing you to work on some of these other aspects of the game that you might necessarily not even think when you're on the ice. And again, that actually kind of brings me to my next question, you know, like the objections, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't like to use the word generational divide, but this is a newer technology that's coming to the forefront, right? And a lot of people could scoff at it or not understand it. And my kind of direction when I talk to people about it is like, look, this is what your kids are going to use, right? This next young generation is going to grow up on these things. They are not going away. They're only going to become more prominent. So as a parent, there's a minor responsibility, even though it's really fun. It's a really fun responsibility, but there's a responsibility for me to want to learn this just to have a clue, right? Because I think technologically, when you don't have a clue what your kids are doing, that might be when you get in trouble. But also the technology is only going to get better and better and better. So you mentioned one of the, you know, quote unquote objections about the platform. What are some other common objections that you hear, right? And then what is your retort to them?
Yeah. Well, if you look at the player product, it's easy to see movement, right? So I believe in your video, you had an 8x10 area, if that, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right? So movement is tough, right? So what we've done is we've created a situation where you've already created time and space, and now you're in a position to make a play, right? So that's kind of the mindset of the player version, right? Or you need to make a pass and then get onto a different angle or get to an open spot within that parameter in which you created to make your next play. We have something coming up. It's going to be a little more movement wise. And so that's going to help combat that. And we're going to try to move into some movement type stuff coming in the future here, which is very cool. But that's probably the number one thing in the player version. And then obviously I touched on the goaltender version of going down. Players want to, goalies want to go down all the time. So that's the biggest complaint on that. But to combat that is, you can take this on the ice, right? So players, you can go on the ice as long as you're not running into boards. Goaltenders, you can go on the ice and you can calibrate to your posts, so you know exactly where you are, and you can go on the ice and get a workout in. I know Bonesy did a great video of he went on the ice for a 15, 20 minute workout session and he's dripping because he's like, this is the real thing. It's the posts are the posts, right? All the marks on the ice within Sense Arena all are within the same boundaries of a regular rink. So there are ways to change this or kind of get on the ice and have some movement. But obviously, you know, we know this, we have our limitations, but as technology changes, we're going to keep changing with it and make it better.
Yeah. That is perfect lead to my next question. So what do you see as the future for Sense Arena? Where are we headed with this technology?
So, I'll let you know a little secret. So our next mode, our next kind of cool thing come out is going to be kind of continuous play, right? So can we take a drill and can we turn it into a shift?
Right?
Yeah. Now you have gameplay.
Wow. Right?
So this is where we're headed. And that's coming up sooner than later. And then beyond that, you know, obviously if you look 2-3 years down the road, you know, AR has become a big thing, or it's going to be a bigger thing, right? Because then it's like, all right, well, then we have augmented reality, and now I can be in my driveway and see holograms and pass them, right? So,
wow, yeah.
And then one more thing is, all right, well, can Liam be in his basement and I'm in mine, and now we're passing to each other, right? Or Mike's a goaltender in his basement, and I'm a player, and I'm shooting on him. You know, these types of things are what we're working on right now. So,
right. So teams could actually practice in their homes.
Right. So if you get easier to each other. Yeah.
No more snow days. No more canceled practice.
No more snow. Is there ever a snow day in hockey? I've never had one.
You know, it's funny you mentioned augmented reality, because that just gave me a ton of ideas about even just being outside with a net and having someone to play with.
Yeah.
Even if you don't, right? Exactly. That is amazing when you think about it. Not to mention the ability to even be at games. So you heard it here first. The 2075 Stanley Cup Final will be played in AR, not unrealized. No, it really is amazing technology. Yeah. I also want to tell you too, Christy. This is one I got was, well, how do you know where you are with that thing on?
Right.
Obviously, depending on what headset you have. The newer ones allow you to see the room that you're in. But okay. It was funny, is the first time I used it, and Andrew said I was in a kind of a small space. This thing lets you know very clearly, hey, you're getting close to a wall or a barrier. Right. And it would freak me out one time as I got too close.
Right.
And it's tough to explain if you're not in it, but a little portal opened up in front of me. Like, and from my point of view, it's 3D. And
right.
I could see my room. It was like coming out of a movie or something like that. Again, they're going to use this clip in 30 years and make fun of all of us. Like, hey, the old people talking about this. But it yeah. really is. Now, you know,
let me ask
amazing.
You this. I did some police training where they had as for a news story where they had that technology, and there were choices given. You know, should you do A, should you do B? And there are different scenarios, and you would pick one, and then they would tell you what the outcome would be with that. Is that something also you think could be weaved into that down the road?
Christy, it sounds like you've been listening to some of our meetings. So,
as a journalist, Andrew, that's what she does.
as we're pushing forward here,
yeah,
here it comes. All right, well, can we create a scenario where you have to choose based on your leads? Are you identifying the correct cues to move to the right position for the next play? So then now we're teaching the game, right? Now we're teaching understanding the patterns and where players should go, you know, just off a read. But they're making that read, right?
Yeah.
So you're hitting on something pretty good there. So
because in the police training, it was really fascinating because it was a shoot or don't shoot decision. Wow. And you have to make these, just like in hockey, you got to make fast, quick decisions.
Yeah.
And it was fascinating to see. And unfortunately, I kind of failed the test there. It didn't end well for me. But somebody who was better trained than me could make the right decision and be reinforced and see the outcome of it. It was just incredible training. Yeah.
So the beauty of this is now a player can do that 1,000 times. Like, think of doing that on the ice. You have to get teammates or players. You have to have a coach. You have to set up the scenario. You have to rent the ice.
Yeah.
Now you can do this 1,000 times over and over and over. Amazing. AI-generated simulations, so it's never going to be the same play.
Yeah.
They're in different positions. Players are in different positions, different speeds. And so you're just running through different puck touches.
So. Incredible. Yeah. Well,
and I'll say this last objection that I'll bring up, you know, sometimes when it looks at you, people can look at the cost of this, which really is not a deal breaker, at least from where I'm standing. But when you look at a sensor in the subscription, you look at the headset you have to get, which is a one-time purchase, right? Mm-hmm. And then compare it to 1 hour of ice time. You know, it's an easy decision at that point, right? Mm-hmm. Keeping in mind that you can have unlimited ice time. So look, it's well worth it. The last thing I want to say to the audience, and Mike, I know you've used this too. There is just no way to express how immersive this is and how real this feels until you try it, right? You can watch all of the videos we put out. You can get a pretty good idea, but until you're really in this headset in your room with a stick in your hand or the glove and the blocker on, and that puck is coming at you and it feels like it's coming at you, there's just no way to know until you try it, right? I don't know. I don't know how else to say that.
Yeah, I think once people start, you know, obviously we'd love people to, you know, leave this episode and really dig into like cognitive training and cognitive development and where that's come. I mean, you know, like 5 or 6 years ago, I was so, you know, focused on the fact that everything we do with our players has to be on the ice, and every movement and every decision and every if we want to make players faster, it has to be on the ice. And, you know, a couple of years ago, I was introduced to this guy, Reggie Grant, who was a trainer with the New York Rangers. And he had a little before Sensarena, there's this company called Microgate, which does real cognitive, true agility training. So the way I use it, like the way I use Sensarena, is I take that cognitive development training and all of that's off the ice. And, you know, one of the things that Reggie certainly sold me on, because I had good debates with him. Like, I want to debate you with this because I think you're wrong. And it came out to be like, listen, once you stick skates on, and once you start asking kids to balance, and once you start asking people to be in situations that you as the coach can't control and fine tune, it becomes harder to process. And if you process your brain quicker, everything, the muscles and the movement and all that stuff will happen. Like, the brain has to happen first. Like, so if you impede it by saying, I want you to think fast, but I also want you to balance. It's like, okay, well, that's a lot to do. So I think, you know, using that off ice training, I know we use Sensarena for the last, I think I have 13 goalies in Sensarena right now. Now using this, and not as a gimmick. And it was a gimmick at first. Like, everybody's like, oh, Mike, you're just trying to sell us. I go, listen, I just don't think you need to get in your car, pack your bag, go to the rink, have a coach. Like, if you're a really good, great goalie coach, you could still be a great goalie coach and say, get all your extra, do all your homework in this. And I can then see it. Like, I can contribute to your success. And I think we're seeing that now with the forwards. Like, mm-hmm. I don't care that I'm not skating or the puck doesn't feel like a puck. What I care about is your brain recognizing where you're supposed to go.
Right.
And eventually it will happen. Your brain will tell you where you need to go. So you don't need to, like to Andrew's point, you're not really like, I'm not a big fan of the shooting piece because it doesn't, but I've gotten better at it. And now mm-hmm. I'm getting better at it. What I'm getting better at is not the actual shooting. It's recognizing where to shoot.
Right.
And I think that's the piece that people have to get by. And they have to say, you know, as far as the cost goes, come to the Katona, come to the Sensorina lab we have. You can try it out. You get unlimited use. I mean, all our players get unlimited use. So our kids can be in it for 5 minutes and not like it, or they could be in it every day for, and again, this is not, I don't think, and Andrew can say what he needs to, but I don't think this is like you're sitting in this for an hour. This is like 20 minutes a day, getting a piece that you want to work on mm-hmm. your own time, on your own dime, without anybody else. And the beauty is you still can have a coach review this. You still can be with an instructor saying, I really don't like, and then, you know, I don't like the way you're doing this, but then really what is the transferable skill to me? It's training the brain to be faster. Then we get on the ice and then we go back to the virtual reality piece and we fine tune it. Then we go back to the ice.
And I would also hope it is a lot of my kids' injuries came as a result of them not having their heads up, not having spatial awareness, being in situations where they weren't aware of the players coming around them. This might have prevented an injury with one of my kids if they had that kind of skill ahead of time and Chrissy, better awareness.
One of the things you mentioned earlier about these coaches, like, we know the coaches aren't teaching that. And the fact is they are teaching that, though.
Right.
Every drill they do doesn't result in an end result. It's like, when I see these private lesson coaches, every drill they do ends up in a shot. Yeah. But in Sense Arena, the majority of the, like, I have most of my kids that use it don't even use the hockey piece. They use the cognitive piece.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're just they're using the timing piece. They're using the recognition piece because it's recognizing.
Yeah.
So knowing and being able to pick up speed is really more important than the actual, like, physical piece of hockey. And I think I don't think it's a standalone device, although I guess if you're in a place where there's no hockey, you could do it, right? You could be playing hockey like you guys are saying. But I think it's part of the trifecta of hockey development is that you can use all these tools to help you get your end result. And I don't know. It's certainly not leaving us. And I think it is. I mean, I know the first I got my first headset right here. I mean, like, so that first headset, the first headset that I was in is certainly not what it is now. And I think
we need to get Christy in a headset just to get that footage.
I'm so jealous of you guys. I would love to do this. I know my daughter would too.
And just seeing the development, though, of the product, again, and Andrew mentioned it earlier, it really was, that's goalies. That's for goalies. Because goalies can just stand there and see pucks. But when you're in that thing and you go, like, NHL mode, I'm like, how do you see that puck? Like, that puck went past me. I didn't even know the kid shot. You know, and I love the fact that, like, there's real players in there now. And there's, like, you really do. And again, the kids that I have in it, I shouldn't even call them kids. These are young men, right? That these are like the Devin Levy, you know, Levi kind of kids. Like, these are the core kids. These aren't like recreational hockey players. These are elite athletes that have found the secret to getting more reps in without killing themselves.
Yes.
And you know, and then be able to turn it off when you want to turn it off. Right. Like, imagine going to the rink and saying, I only want to do 5 minutes today. Your coach's head would explode. Like, and your parents, if you're paying for it, right? But now I could say, I'm not really into it right now. I'll come back to it. You turn it off, you go, you get back in. And I think that's what's, you know, the beauty about that self, you know, the self-teaching piece of it.
Yeah. I want to touch on a couple of things you said. One, just for users, Mike was talking about the cognitive platform. It's a separate platform that's on the Sense Arena, and it doesn't involve goalie gloves or hockey stick or anything. It's just about working on your focus, your reaction, your memory, your proprioception, and your ability to work on your decision-making skills and how fast you can do it. So that's that. And then also, Mike, you touched on the stick part of it and shooting. And Liam, I kind of left that out by accident, but shooting is a part where kids get in there and they get frustrated because they can't snipe bar down every time, right? and they can't stick handle and you know, back and forth. But again, it comes back to for us, what we've developed is obviously a way to get extra reps, right? Cognitive reps. So we've kind of already done our job. If you get to the point where you do need to take that shot or you are making that pass, and obviously we want that pass to go tape to tape, and we want you to score top shelf, right? But again, they've already done the work part, right? And that's the fun part to keep them coming back for more. So we're going to continue to refine that stuff, but really it's the cognitive piece that they're working on. So
Andrew, just from a multi-sport piece, like, so our athletes at the school are basketball, baseball, and even some of the lacrosse kids use the cognitive piece. So they log in and they don't even care about hockey. It has nothing. They don't need a stick habitat. They don't need any of the stuff. They just use the controllers, which come, you know, the controllers come with the, you know, you got your headset and the controllers, and that's it. You're in the cognitive mode. And I think what that does, if you're a parent and you're like, oh, I got one hockey kid and the rest are, you know, soccer and baseball kids. Well, the process, it works for everything, you know? And I think that cognitive piece is so important because it's fun. I mean, you get in that thing, you're sweating. I mean, you get out of it. And like, you know, we have to devise a whole system of the kid coming out of the headset, cleaning it, you know, each kid has their own eyepiece, you know, whatever, silicone piece. So it's all the process of saying, you know, we love the fact that the kids are excited to get into something new and get into something on their own time. They could go down their study hall and get in the Sense Arena. Where could you do that? Like, where could you go down for 20 minutes in between class and get reps in? You can't do it. So this is the way to do it. It's become like the modern shooting room. And, you know, and I think if you have that I don't know if you can divulge all the teams, but like every NHL tour that I've, or every NCAA tour that I've done with my 16 and 7 year old kids, when we go around, every one of these places have a shooting room, and they all have Sense Arena in them. Now they got their sticks, got their real pucks, but then they got the space because now they can put their headsets on. I think it was at Boston College that you guys did a good clip on, like, and the guy's like freaking out. I was like, VR, what the hell is this? Like, this is unbelievable. Like, and I was laughing because I kind of picked up and I'm like, we have VR. I mean, that's the, you know, we're trying to be a modern, you know, development program, but again, use it at your own time and space and your need. And that's what's great about going into the different pieces of this is you find what you want to work on and you can go in and log in and do it.
And a great thing to tell your kids, Mike, is like, how many shots do you take a game? Mm-hmm. One or two. How many passes? How many pre-scans? How many scans? How many times are you identifying cues to make a certain play? Over thousands of times, right? So that's the part of the brain, you know, we really want to get going, right? And so if I look at development as a whole, you have your off ice, you have your health, you have your sleep, you have your nutrients, you have your shooting, but it's that cognitive piece that's kind of been left out, and so we're trying to fill that void and for young players and for NHL players players as well. So
I will say this, you have to look at NHL Sense Arena as a tool to improve your game, right? That's for actually any age that wants to use it, really, even beyond youth hockey. That's number one. Number two, I think it's important to say, and I think people can get lost on this sometimes, VR is not a coming technology anymore. It's here, right? It's here, and it's only going to get more prominent. And I think we're all in agreement here that this technology for today is at a really good place for hockey players and athletes to be using. Like, I wouldn't say this is experimental anymore. Maybe 5-10 years ago, you could have said that. Like, this is here. This is a tool now for your kids. If we were to like defining that advantage, right? This is one of those advantages. It's that everyone can share. Andrew, it's been really great having you here today. I've really enjoyed this conversation. You know, we wanted to provide value to the audience, both from your career, but also about NHL Sense Arena. I really feel like we've accomplished that.
No, I appreciate having on. And one thing I want to add to those points you just mentioned is that we try to make it fun too, right? Mm-hmm. Because kids aren't going to do it if it's not fun. So go in there, be your favorite team, play multiplayer against your buddy at his house when you're at your house. Have some fun with it. And if you can train and have fun at the same time, it's a win-win.
And there's always something new happening in NHL Sense Arena, which is also really fun. Every time you go in there, there's a new arena to go to. You guys just added MetLife Stadium for the stadium series that's coming up. The All-Star Game had a whole thing going on. You know, you look forward to see what are they going to do next. It keeps you coming back. And Mike, I'll have to tell you this. I'm going to have to set a timer because I'm in there for way more than 20 minutes when I do it. And that's saying something. But Andrew, again, I just want to thank you for coming on today. This has been a fantastic episode.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate you. Pumping our tires a little bit, but also just talking about Sensorena, what's good, what's bad, the reality of it, and how it's going to help kids in the development.
Absolutely. Well, and look, those of you listening, you can tell we're all pretty passionate about this. And if you're not intrigued about it after this episode, I don't know what to tell you. If you are intrigued, though, you should know we do have a discount code for you, $50 off your subscription using the code HockeyNeverStops at hockey.sensorena.com. For those of you watching the episode, Mike has his headset on. There's just no way to look cool in a headset just yet. At some point, it's going to become a mainstream thing, and everyone will do it.
Just, but, it just you know, immerse through my face.
Yeah, it's just a funny thing right now. But yeah, in 20 years, 10 years, no one will be laughing at it. It'll just be a normal thing that we see. But for Andrew Alberts, Christy Casciano Burns, and Mike Benelli, I'm Lee Elias. We will see you all on a next episode of Our Kids Play Hockey. Head over to OurKidsPlayHockey.com for more information, or make sure you join our Facebook group, Our Kids Play Hockey, to continue the conversation off the ice. We'll see you next time, everybody. Have a great day. We hope you enjoyed this edition of Our Kids Play Hockey. Make sure to like and subscribe right now if you found value wherever you're listening, whether it's a podcast network, a social media network, or our website, OurKidsPlayHockey.com. Also, make sure to check out our children's book, When Hockey Stops, at WhenHockeyStops.com. It's a book that helps children deal with adversity in the game and in life. We're very proud of it. But thanks so much for listening to this edition of Our Kids Play Hockey, and we'll see you on the next episode.